Hello and welcome to In Her Corner, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and empowering women working at every level of sport, on and off the field. I'm your host, Liseli Sitali, and today I'm truly excited for our guest as she's a woman who is at the forefront of creating a truly exciting platform and has a huge passion for the beautiful game. It's the absolutely wonderful and awe-inspiring Victoire Kojevina. Hello, Victoire.
Hello, Liseli. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Very excited. Great. I've been waiting for this moment.
Yeah, me too, for a while now. So as I alluded to there, you're building a truly incredible football community platform called Gloria. So you are both the CEO and co-founder of Gloria. So I'd love you to tell everybody a little bit about Gloria and your ambitions and hopes for it. And then we'll dive into a little bit more about your background and career working in football.
Amazing. Yes. So Gloria is really a dream come true for me. I came from the football industry. I was an agent representing Latin American players in the MLS here in the United States, where I'm based. And during my time at the agency, I really started looking at the online space in football. And I kind of realized that the offline experience of the sport is pretty amazing. And I'm sure that you can agree with me on that point. By going to a stadium, watching your favorite team with your friend, speaking
Absolutely.
About it.
Yeah. It's the magic. It's the magic
exactly,
of the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that experience really doesn't translate online, unfortunately. Or at least that was my first observation. So then I started doing a lot of research and trying to understand, you know, how could that be changed? And really building a consumer product that would allow football fans and players to keep experiencing the sport once they were at home. And that's how Gloria really started, with a very big ambition of building the home of football online, which we are in the process
that.
Of doing.
And how did you get to the granular concept of obviously what you've got now? Because sort of for everybody who hasn't yet been lucky enough to be invited to be part of the beta community so they can get a flavor, I kind of see your platform as a cross between three things that I love, which is sort of a home of sort of the user fan experience, as well as all the lovely interpersonality and spontaneity of great platforms we've seen emerge in the last year, like TikTok, and of course, heritage platforms like Instagram and Facebook. So how is it that you came to the idea of amalgamating all of these things? But also, I love the element, just with my biased background being in broadcast media, I love the element of also the editorial angle and the news side that you're building into it. So how did you come to the idea of having all those things in one? Because those businesses running them on their own is tough, and building those platforms, I know from experience. But how did you come to the idea that having them all together as one was the right way in which to elevate that fan online experience you spoke about there?
So I think, I mean, from a high level standpoint, there was a real problem, and there still is a real problem, with the fragmentation of online communities around the sport, right? You either follow Barcelona or you follow Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Or you follow Cristiano or you follow Messi. Or you like Nike or you like Adidas, you know? And it's pretty crazy, because there are smaller groups of people hanging out online, speaking about the sport, but they're all separate. So, for example, you and I, unless we follow the same team or like the same player, we will never find each other online. And that's a shame, right?
True.
Really, to solve that specific problem, and that's when my co-founder comes in. I come from the industry, but he has the technical background. He used to be the head of product partnerships at Facebook in Menlo Park. And prior to that, had been the head of product of another really big photo community app with over 30 million users. And Matthias really understands at a very deep level what kind of features you need to build to get people involved and people getting people's attention, really. And we saw that there are behaviors online that already exist around football, right? There's WhatsApp groups where you talk about your favorite team, or if you have a Sunday league, there's Discord, there's, you know, Facebook groups, there's Instagram accounts. I mean, there's a lot going on, and people kind of want all those different sorts of media to be able to really connect with the sport at a really deep level. And for us, it was kind of finding a good combination of all of those by really analyzing existing behaviors and bringing them and centralizing them in one platform. Now, we have a really big vision where it's like in 5 years from now, we will be streaming games. And we'll, you know, be the platform where you come and if you want to rent a pitch to play a pickup game, you'll do that too. And if you want to find out about your favorite players, news, you'll do that too. And then if you want to see the scores and if you want to just meet friends from your same team in another city. But to get there, we need to take baby steps, obviously, and we need to try and understand, you know, what are the features that today are really the most important. So we started with a video feature, which is similar to TikTok in the sense that it's heavy on video. The user experience is great. Yeah. And then the difference is that every single content piece that you watch is football related, whether it's a player doing a training video or some drills in their backyard or freestyling as well as fans uploading old, now unfortunately, stadium videos where they were going to watch games live. And that really worked well at the beginning. And then with time, we saw obviously the pandemic kind of hit at the same time we launched, or not really launched, but started testing the feature. And we saw people were running out of content to post because they weren't going to
stadium. I was about to ask you about that. I was about to ask you how that was going, how, what kind of user behavior you started to see.
Well, we saw that they were running out of content and that the friction to participate in the community was becoming higher and higher. Obviously, we have some power users that are content creators, and for them, that was not an issue because that was their full-time job. But now, for someone even like myself, right? I'm not a player, so I cannot record you any kind of skill in my backyard, but I am a big fan. And I uploaded every single video I've ever shot in a stadium, which I had many of them, but at some point, I run out of them. So, it was normal. So, we started thinking, okay, well, we need to figure out a new way to make people be able to participate in the community and be a part of the conversation, whether they want to shoot a video or not. And that's how we came up with communities, which is a new feature we're still testing and we'll be launching very soon, that essentially allows anyone on the platform to build a community around a specific topic within football. And the use cases for that is massive, right? I mean, you can go from...
I can imagine. A business like Bleacher Report and Give Me Sports. Those are two big evidence bases for you, right?
That's the validation for sure. But you really can go deep and build a community around what you're interested the most in. So whether it's a goalkeeping community where they can find out about nutritional tips and training drills and scouting calls and whatever it is around goalkeeping, to, you know, thinking about an academy having their own community where they can talk with their 2,000 players in a way that feels much more engaging to a 12-year-old than email.
What, 12-year-olds don't read emails? What? What
are you saying? So it's really the use cases for this is great, and we're, you know, in the process of understanding what people want. We're allowing to not only post videos but also images, text, and URLs. Obviously we're seeing, you know, people loving it and participating in a way that is really near to what we care about, which is creating a deep bond in between people and their passion. Making them feel seen for what they love, which is something that you know, connects very deeply to why I started this company initially.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to talk to you about that because obviously, you know, you noticed a gap in the market, and I think that gap in it is very real. And I also think the changing behavior of fans is also something to consider that your platform probably addresses, particularly when you look at Generation Z's behavior. And I was speaking recently to the head of sports partnerships for media at Facebook, and she was talking a lot about this, about how a lot of us sort of in the broadcast media space and rights holders, a lot of the teams and the football clubs that you were talking to there, need to realize that 90 minutes that we've traditionally had audiences watching it is no longer going to be the normal behavior. And they're already starting to see patterns of behavior, which I'm sure Matthias has spoken to you at great length about from his days at Facebook himself, around fans dropping off and no longer needing being glued to that full 90 minutes. And so needing to find more innovative, engaging ways to keep the game present of mind so that this industry that we've built off the back of, but in the building of that industry, one of the main reasons I started this podcast and why I was so excited about meeting you was a lot of women's participation in the game. The women's game has been largely kept out of every development we've had of building football as a really wealthy, lucrative business. And I know this is something that's very close to your heart. As you mentioned, you used to be an agent. So do you want to talk to a little bit about why also for you the name Gloria and why you wanted to make this platform in a women's image? Because I think that's very interesting for me, because a lot of businesses around football are overtly masculine, which I think shrinks the possibility for women.
Well, I'm going to start by saying that it's over. The days of building in football that don't include women are over, for sure, especially at Gloria. I grew up being a fan of the sport in a country that did not allow for women to be a part of the sport, let alone play it. I'm half Greek, half Argentinian, so in both my countries, really, that happened. Even though I feel more Argentinian when we talk about football. For no particular reason.
I was going to say, I think most people would say I can understand that, given the heritage.
But yes, I mean, it's. I grew up and I was lucky because I had a brother that took me in with him and would take me to the rowdiest places of the stadium and would really treat me as another fan. And
yeah,
but I know that wasn't the case for a lot of women. And when I would, tell my friends or tell people that I just met that I love the sport, they were shocked because it was not a thing women really did at that point. And that discrimination, I felt it. And I don't want anyone to feel that way, because football is really the best part of my life. Now it's my profession and it feeds me, but it's always been my passion. And my identity and who I am and what I know and what I want to do in this world. And, I was lucky to be in the right place with the right people around me, but I know a lot of girls don't. So based on that and based on understanding that the landscape is changing, and I'm so excited to be, starting this company during this time, because I didn't, I obviously didn't manipulate any of what's going on in women's football, but it's happening at the same time. And I got really involved with it because, I had traditionally only worked with male athletes. I only represented men. And, 7 years ago when we got started, 8 years ago now, actually, representing women was not a business. It didn't exist.
I was going to say the professionalization. Exactly.
Unless you were talking about the U.S. women's national team players, and most of them didn't have agents 8 years ago either.
No.
And they were still winning World Cups. So, trying to understand where we stand today and seeing the massive change, we're looking at the future and we're saying, okay, companies need to start understanding that there's a whole new business opportunity out there. And we can't pretend it doesn't exist anymore. You actually need to build products thinking about the female consumption behaviors. You need to think about the marketing of how you actually get them to be a part of products that are this way. You really need to go deep on that. And in this case, obviously, I can talk because I'm a woman. But I can see a lot of male teams that don't do this. And not because they don't want to. I mean, honestly, I think at this point it's in fashion to help women, which is great. We need to ride the wave. But if you actually don't have women in your team, it's pretty tough. And so I'm lucky, honored, every single good word you can think of to be in the position that I am. But at the same time, I had to create this position because I don't think I would have ever found this kind of job anywhere.
Yeah, I was going to go on and say that you've had to create this seat at the table for yourself, and you've had to create it in order to enable a springboard to advance women's love of the game, participation in the game, and visibility. And that's still, you know, a challenge. As great as the strides that have been made globally around the women's game, I think that's still a very much a present day challenge. So for you, what makes you hopeful? What do you see as being a really great unique opportunity for growing, continuing to grow interest and commercial opportunity in the women's game? Where do you see that? If you were sort of giving advice to, you know, those big sort of powerhouse brands, the Coca-Colas, et cetera, of the world that are yet to come into the fore, because, you know, we've seen Visa take great steps investing in the women's game, MasterCard and Barclays Bank here in Europe and the UK. But where do you see that opportunity in the US, maybe to speak a little bit to that?
You know, here in the US is interesting because it's a women's game here. It's never been a man's game. And still, even though it's a women's game, we still can see on the commercial side of things that they're not taking the steps that they should be taking.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
I think that in the last couple of years, specifically since the national team won the World Cup, women's football became a stance to stand for. You know, it became something people stand for brands stand for that. And that is a massive opportunity for a brand to kind of attach themselves to something like this. We know consumers no longer want to consume brands that don't take a stance around something they care about. And I always say that women's football is much more than just a sport. It's actually about gender equality. And in a way that very other few things can portray that.
Can match. Yeah, can match.
And I really do believe that today it may not be the biggest business opportunity as in the revenue generating machines that there are behind it, but it's definitely an investment. And I can promise you that the brands that are taking the stance today, in 3-4 years from now, are going to see a massive return. Like massive.
Yes.
And they're starting to do it, honestly. And it's great to see it. I think that's not enough, though. There's a lot of more grassroots work that needs to be done around the sport.
Yes.
So it becomes better and better. The quality of the athletes, the athletes themselves, the story around these athletes. And I know that in your podcast, you touch upon this a lot, right? How can we tell the stories in a better way?
Yeah.
And for us at Gloria, that's really one of the key messages is being able to give that opportunity to create visibility around your career without, you know, the need of a manager, an agent, a social media manager, you know, all those things, right?
Yeah.
And I come across a ton of really amazing stories around girls that came from favelas, that came from really nothing and made themselves into a professional player. And are still working two jobs because that doesn't pay enough. And
it's
really
crazy.
Need to be told. They need to be told because and that I think you said that in your last podcast where it was, you know, this is not only going to inspire other women, but it also inspires men. And I completely agree with that. So, you know, if Gloria can become the place where they can use some of our features to gain visibility, then we're helping in the process of also getting then brands taking that visibility and really exponentiating it into something that is going to bring return one way or another. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's that long, big picture that, you know, often women's sport for some reason doesn't get the break on, but men's sport definitely did in order to become as big as it did. And you know yourself, having represented a lot of players, you know, when you first take them to a football club, you know, it's the investment potential that they do in players. It's not, you know, the fact that they already bona fide a World Cup winner, multi-golden boot player or whatever. It's the fact that they have the potential. They invest in them. And so the question is, why don't we think about women's sport as a really great startup business opportunity that if we resource properly from both a finance and a talent and a time and a resource perspective, we can actually build into a multi-billion pound business given the size of the audience,
Absolutely.
So it's a big miss. And when you are sort of looking forward, like if in 5-4 years time, what sort of things do you want to see happening for around the business of football that can really continue to accelerate those that positive momentum that you obviously build in Gloria around?
Well, I think you just said something that struck a chord for me, which is, you know, women's football is really a startup. We are in startup mode, and that gives us an edge men don't have, right? The way men's football works today is very set in stone, has very little room for movement or flexibility. And in most cases, and I'm going to try my best to not... to be as diplomatic as I can.
No, you're amongst friends, Victoire. You're amongst friends, so you can say how you see it.
But a lot of the processes within men's football is poorly done. It's not working out. It's just the player doesn't win, the club doesn't win, the broadcasters don't win. It's just like a few people that do, and then the rest is not great. And I think in women, we kind of... all of us that are in the industry got kind of an opportunity to look at it from a completely different standpoint and say, okay, what can we fix and what can we do better?
Yeah.
And how we can generate this into a bigger business than the men's, because I truly believe that that's going to happen at some point. Maybe I'm insane for saying that, but I really do believe.
No, I'm with you.
I really do believe
no,
that that's going to happen, so. Or at least it's going to be the same. Yeah. There's going to be the same excitement around the men's World Cup as there is going to be for the women. And that to me is going to happen. It's going to happen in the next maybe 15 years, maybe even 10, who knows. But, you know, in terms of like really looking at the industry and saying there's a startup way of doing things, I, as the CEO of this company, take advantage of that quite a lot. Because even from a partnership standpoint, from an investment standpoint, they're always more open to doing things, right? And scouting, I believe, is a great example, right? So, so far for men, the way that you scout men is very different depending on the market that you're in. But at the end of the day, it's a very manual process that requires players to have either network or funds to kind of get to this place. In the women's side of things, we have an opportunity right now, and I'm seeing this happen a lot, which is let's use technology to find this talent. And technology basically scales the scouting efforts to a level that men could never do, right? Because if you find a way to find great talent online, then suddenly every corner of this world is in your pocket. And you can really find the next Marta, the next Megan Rapinoe in countries that maybe would have never even think that they live in. And that is true for a lot of other things within women's football. So I think that, you know, in 5 years from now, women are going to take big strides in growing the game in ways that are different from the men, and that the men are going to learn from and apply to their own sector. And I'm excited to see that happen.
Yeah, no, and I definitely think that that's such a good point you make there about the scouting system, right? Because at the moment, it's very manual intensive. And if we think about how the current global pandemic has affected that, right? You can now no longer go to a lot of amateur games because they're not on. So what do you do as a scout if you have that remit in a club to find that next star? What are the innovative ways you can do that? And as you say, because men's football has a whole tiered system of organizing scout system through FIFA, through other big, powerful organizations like UEFA. And if you look at how one of your home countries, I should say, CONMEBOL, etc., all of that structure, it's very set and rigid and doesn't allow that agility and flexibility. Whereas to, as you say, because women's side of the game is still in that phase where it can really shift and move and really respond to actually what does scouting look like in a post-COVID era, you know? And I think that those are the exciting things that happen, the countless possibilities that they are to now meet new challenges to keep people playing the game as well. And one thing I find really interesting about you is that although you don't play the game, you're incredibly really passionate about it. And you spoke there about how a lot of your passion was really fueled and encouraged by your brother. So is that been the only influence that has kept you really rooted and focused into, you know, activating all these great opportunities you're seeing for football? Or is it something else? What else kind of drives you? Because I'm sure as people listen to you and I've got to know more about you, I'm always so fascinated by people who are so well accomplished as you and speak with that passion and love. What is it that what keeps you ticking? What gets you going?
I mean, the first month I was working in football officially, I knew that this was the industry I was going to dedicate the rest of my life to. And I say this with a conviction I've never felt before. And I know I'm very lucky because a lot of people don't get to find their thing that early on in life. And I must say that I have my mother to thank for. She is a FIFA agent. I got into the business because of her. And she...
That's awesome.
She's fearless. One of the best negotiators you'll ever meet. A funny, smart woman that really believes in transparency in business. And I was lucky to just be there and be her daughter, honestly, because probably I would have never gotten this chance if that didn't happen. And I remember when we first got started and we're negotiating contracts, and they were treating us so badly. And she never cared one bit. And she always...
I was going to say to you, how did you cope with that? Because it's a very macho, cutthroat world, typically speaking, the world of football agents. And I can imagine even more so given, you know, the sort of background you've painted there of the lack of opportunities for women is simply watching the game, never mind working it and representing players. How did you your mother meet that challenge? Because that's quite a stern, difficult one.
It was never a challenge for her. And that's why I can tell you that I was very lucky, and I'm going to keep saying that because I was in the right place at the right time. And I partnered with a woman that told me all the time, she told me, never let your gender be an excuse for not doing something or for doing something.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Yeah.
And she repeated that to me all the time because I, at the beginning, I felt, you know, I knew they were treating us poorly. I knew that they were, you know, leaving us out of deals that we started generating. They would make comments that were completely out of place and, you know, do all this sort of stuff that I think most women that have been in any minimally male-dominated industry would have gone through. But she never cared. She was like, look, this is what it is. They're going to treat us that way until they can't. Until they can't ignore us anymore. And she's like, the best thing that we can do is get the most players, become the agency that essentially represents the best Latin American talent in the world. And then they're going to have to do business with us, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
And she was right. She was so right. And it was years before that actually happened, right? We missed out on a lot of deals also because of the corruption that there is. She was always, you know, she was a wealth manager and on that side of things, very transparent with her transactions and all of that. And she really, you know, wanted to bring that into football, which may sound very simple, but honestly, there's a lot of things going on, especially in the player transfer world that we got to
see. That's difficult. That make that impossible.
Yeah. And we got to see and we missed out on deals because she's like, either we do it the right way or we don't. And I don't care if we need to sit out of this deal. And we missed like over 240 something deals. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, at the end she really persevered and I'm gonna give her all the credit because I was always behind her and I was always, you know, kind of looking at her in awe because it's not easy.
It's not easy. No, it's not. No. No, definitely. It's that not sacrificing her integrity and her principles for that and making sure she stayed absolutely rooted to who she was and what she stood for. And I think ultimately, although it takes a long time, you know, that's something that I say to a lot of young girls that I'm lucky enough to mentor that, you know, never sell out on your purpose and your why, you know, eventually it will help land you exactly where you're meant to be. And that will then reap you the success because you're then doing something you absolutely believe in. You work twice as hard and nothing, you know, I always say to people, true hard work and commitment and intentionality cannot be outbeaten by anything.
Absolutely. Amen to that too.
Yeah.
I must say, yeah, you know, when you talk about your why and finding your why early on is probably the best advice you can give anyone, because that will always be the reason why you get out of bed. It's going to be the reason why you keep going once you get hurt. It's going to be the reason why, you know, you do what you do. And for me, you know, the beginning of when I started Gloria, and it was, you know, players are a big part of our user base, and I wasn't a player, and I remember feeling kind of like a fraud, right? And a lot of people asked me that. They were like, "You don't play?" And I was like, "No, I don't. I don't play. Unfortunately, I don't play. I wish I did. I would lose all credibility if you ever saw me with
I was going to say, especially being Argentinian. I'm sure also because you were Argentine, they were like, "Oh, she must play. She's half Argentine."
And
half
I was like,
"Speaks Italian and all these languages. She must."
I was like, "Because I'm Argentinian, I don't play, because women don't play in Argentina." Now they started to, but when I was young, they didn't. And and you know, for me, it was hard, because it was like, why? I understood what players went through because I had worked with them. In a very, you know, in a very emotional and personal level, because a lot of the work, the last few years at the agency, a lot of the work that I did was around players' image. So I would work with specific clients that we had at the agency that we thought had a lot of potential in terms of the commercial side of things. And we would design everything from their haircuts to their goal celebrations, to their social media strategy, to their sponsorship deals. And at that point, you know, MLS players were not the number one choice for brands to use them, right? And especially not Latin American MLS players. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, breaking kind of barriers there and like doing all this stuff. But honestly, at the end of the day, I remember once I was trying to really understand why I was doing this with so much passion and like why I was so committed to it. And I realized that, you know, a lot of the players that I came across and I keep coming across live in a system and in a world that is very unfair. And it's unfair because you can put in a lot of work and really sacrifice everything in your life to become a professional football player. And that can all like never happen. And actually for most players, that never happens. And but you still see the amount of, you know, work and commitment and the sacrifice of families and their own sacrifice of not having a social life and traveling all the time and living in different places every 6 months and, you know, doing all of that. And I remember seeing the frustration in their eyes because it's like, I'm doing everything right and I'm still not getting what I want. And I could relate to that. I could relate to that. And I think most human beings can relate to that because visibility and feeling seen is something that is a human need that is hard to feel. It is hard to feel.
Yes.
So I, growing up, always felt invisible. I felt invisible to my parents. I felt invisible to my friends for a number of different reasons, because I didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like I was in the right place or I was doing the right thing. And the only place where I would feel, you know, a part of something and really seen was when I was going to the stadium. That was my place.
Yeah, so, that was your place.
So I started realizing that players go through the same thing. They just don't feel good. And it's really painful. And I started seeing, I said, you know what? I understand this. I understand the pain. And I have the ability, the network, and I have, you know, the resilience to kind of build something that can scale that visibility at the end of it. And technology is going to be my vehicle. And every morning when I wake up and I receive an email with bad news or I get on a call with something and something doesn't go my way, I know that at the end of the day, I am operating from a place that I know very well. And I don't want other players to feel the same. So I give them the tools to get to a place that they maybe would have never gotten if they didn't have Gloria on their phones. Then I'm doing something right and I'm going to keep doing it until it's normal. And especially for women, because I think at this point, it's much more intensified in women than it is in men. And
100%.
We can do something about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's that empowerment that comes from visibility, right? I think that was definitely a theme that came out of a lot of the struggles we saw last year in a lot of the confrontations around anti-racism, a lot of the confrontations continuously that go on around sexism that people don't identify, as you very, very eloquently put there, that diminishing effect that it has, and to be able to create a platform that has a really unifying, powerful tool like football, together with that social purpose, is such a great sweet spot. As you say, it's about humanity then, right? It stops being in that identity back. And I think that's what I really love about the sentiment behind what drives you. And now when you look at all the things that have defined you, if you were to sort of give advice, and I'm sure there's a lot of people sitting there taking in the notes and everything, but what have sort of been your career defining lessons? And I must caveat to everyone, by the way, Victoire is really young. So this might make you feel really ill, but she's actually 30 years old, I believe, from my research, because I first came across you 29, even worse. I had decided to add a year to make myself feel okay. So yeah, I first came across her speaking at SoccerX in 2018. And I remember on the stage, you introduced yourself as being 27. So actually that was bad maths on my part. I should have been able to work that out. So yeah. So what I was going to say to you was, what are those sort of career defining moments that have been for you? Three highlights or observations or things? Because there you spoke really well about your why and how it's helped you cement you to then drive you to build this purpose driven platform. But what are the other things that have, you know, you've learned, good and bad, by the way? I must stress in this section, I like both good and bad. I don't want it to just be self-deprecating, and I know you're very modest, but I do want to take a moment to celebrate the good things that you're doing as well.
Look, I think that the very best thing that has ever happened to me is find the right people to support what I'm building and what I'm doing. And that really started with my co-founder. And I have the honor of working with world-class talent. That's something I always say to him. And I always say to everyone, because it's amazing to witness that kind of level of genius around understanding what he does. And and Gloria would never be Gloria if we didn't have someone like him on the team. And I think that in football specifically, we really needed that, because there was a lot of people within the industry trying to build tech products, but it takes a very specific kind of skill to build a good consumer product.
Definitely.
And I knew nothing about technology, but I didn't know that football is such a big market. There's so many people that love it that you can't go into building a product for them without understanding that this is going to touch half the world.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. So, and I see Matias do this. Like, he treats Gloria as if it was a Facebook or an Instagram. It's not like a football-related thing. I mean, obviously, it does operate in football, but we're building for half the world. And that's, you know, sounds very ambitious, but it's also what we are actually doing. So, you know, I think that finding the right people and partnering up, I think it's a motto in my life, always in every every single, you know,
area.
I said, always partner up.
Love that.
I think that that was really important. And I can say, I can extend that to my investors. I was really, 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 you know, lucky. I keep saying the word lucky. I think there's a lot of hard work there for sure.
I was going to say, you're close to my fining system now, Victoire. Self-deprecation. I did tell you about this. Cost you $50 a time.
God, yeah,
so,
I know.
So let's talk about the fact that you were not lucky. You were intelligent enough, brilliant enough to attract really good investors. And do you want to talk about the hard work that you put into that was finally recognized through the investors you've got?
Yes. And look, I say lucky because there is a component of that, right? Right time, right place.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
There is a component of that for sure. It's, you can do everything right and not get lucky. That happens.
So,
look, in our specific case, I mean, the investors that we brought in, especially the more high profile ones like Alexis Opinion,
yeah,
he it was a combination of a bit of everything, right? It was the right time for him. He had gone to the World Cup in 2000.
Yeah.
Fallen in love with the sport, fallen in love with women's football. He, as a business person, saw that there was an opportunity and started talking about it on Twitter nonstop. And he also happened to have a fund that is a very well-known fund that has invested in some of the biggest tech companies in the world. And we were building a tech company. So, you know, getting in front of him was not easy. We actually got rejected 7 times.
Oh, wow.
By the end, my co-founder was like, they're going to treat you like a stalker. You need to stop. And I was like, no, I know if he actually sees the deck, he's going to love it.
Yes.
And actually, you know, the people around him weren't, you know, they said it was not a good fit. The Gloria was not a good fit. Gloria was not a good fit. And anyways, long story short, he ended up getting his hands on the deck and you know, made us an offer pretty quickly. But having people like Alexis, and we, by the way, have a lot of other investors. We have a Juventus board member, Asia Gracioli, who is also, aside from being in the sport for the last, you know, 15 years, and the first woman on the board of Juve.
At Juve, I was about to say. Yeah.
And she, one of the first women to ever be on a board of a major club in Europe also.
And in Italy. Full stop. Yeah. Sorry, shout out to my Italian fans.
you know, and she was also a tech investor and understanding of what it takes to build a consumer product, and had been at Spotify very early on. And you know, talent like that is really what makes Gloria at the end of the day. I have a really big passion around this, and I have a big vision. But if I didn't have all these people around me supporting that, it would be very, very hard. And I always say, you know, my investors are part of my team. I just can't afford them.
Yeah.
So they work with me from in a different way, right? And I've, you know, worked with amazing people so far, and I'm always excited to bring in new people, new fresh blood that really believes in what we're doing. And I think that that's probably the best advice I could ever give to anyone is, partner up and find the people that can make it happen for you and with you. And don't be scared. I mean, I heard a lot of no's before I got my first yes. I counted every single one of them, actually.
How many so we can laugh at them?
147.
147 bad business decision makers. Okay, we got that.
No,
I said it. I said it. You did it. I said it. Just for the record, Victoire did not say that. I said that.
No, wait. We need to do a lot of things before proving everyone wrong. But you know, it's that's probably the very best thing that has happened so far. And I'm very grateful for every single one of them for taking a chance on me, from the smallest investors that have given me, you know, $5,000 all the way to the ones that give me millions of dollars. Every single one of them believe and can see the vision of Gloria and wanted to want that to exist and happen. And there's nothing like that energy, like that momentum. So if you're out there and you have a big vision, find your partner up always. Never be scared of wanting to work with the best in the world. Because you can find a way to them, especially now with Instagram and DM. I mean, you can really DM anyone. And there's going to be a lot of no's in the process. And actually, to me, the way that I see no's, which has been probably on the more negative side of things, you know, I struggled a lot on a personal level because getting rejected 147 times was never pleasant.
It's tough.
And
really tough.
Didn't have the right mindset around it until pretty recently, I must say.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? How did you get into that mindset? Yeah.
Getting rejected, to me specifically, was very painful because my entire life I had always never gotten rejected, in the sense that, you know, I was a very good student. I was valedictorian. I went to a good college. Yeah. I got the jobs I wanted. Yeah. You know, I always was the
high achiever. Yeah.
High achiever that would achieve the things too. Right. Yes. And when I started this, you know, I remember a mentor of mine would tell me that I had to do a lot of personal work, kind of like quote unquote therapy, to be able to be strong enough to endure what entrepreneurship would bring over me. And I remember looking at him and saying, that sounds ridiculous. And he was so right. He was so right, because there's such a personal component within us, trying to understand things that happen when we're young. I mean, it's really a lot of therapy to be able to build up to the right mindset. And I didn't have it at the beginning. I would get a no, and it would take me days to get
to recover
from it and get back up. And it was really painful, to a point where it's like, I don't want to do it anymore, because it was, you know, it was, you put your entire life on the table. You show up.
Yes.
You tell them, you know, I've dropped everything. When I started Gloria, I had left
to
the
come
agency.
Here.
I had left a stable job with a salary. I had a big fight with my mother, because obviously I started that agency with her.
With her.
And I found myself in a place where I had nothing, and I was starting from scratch all over again. I mean, I remember not being able to pay my rent, and having to the electricity was down, and I had no water, and I had to go charge my phone in the office.
Oh wow!
Do all these crazy things that today I know were worth it. And while they were happening, I never felt bad for a second. I'm like, this, I know this is worth it. But imagine how much conviction I had in the idea and in the company, that I brought that conviction into business meetings. And when I was said no 147 times in a row, it was hard. It was hard. Many times it's like, well, maybe, you know, maybe this is not a good idea, and maybe this is never going to happen. And like really having those doubts and like battling those doubts, that was like a really dark period.
I can imagine.
With a lot of work that I've done over the past, I would say even year and a half now. I changed my mindset around it. And I think mindset is key here, right? Because you can look at things from two different point of views and be miserable in one and be the happiest person in the other. So my mindset became one of, okay, you know, every time I sit in front of an investor, instead of thinking that there's a possibility of getting rejected, I'm going to leave that on the side, and I'm just going to think, what can I learn from this?
Yes.
Every time that you sit in front of an investor, they will bring up something that you never thought about. Every single time. They will actually make your business stronger because
stronger. I was about to say,
they will, you know, ask you a question about something you actually never even thought about, and you'd be like, "Oh wow, that was a blind spot," and I was like going around without blind spot, and you know,
and inadvertently weakening your position,
exactly,
because of it.
Exactly. Or you know, or it'd be, you know, sometimes you sit in front of investors, especially if you do your due diligence and you really think of, you know, you really kind of strategize around what kind of investor you're going to be pitching in front, which I think is also very important. These are people that are top of their field. They've invested in thousands of companies. They've seen the startup story go over and over and over and over.
Yes.
And they know something. They do. I mean, sometimes, you know, being a founder, you feel like you know everything, and it's kind of going back to being a 15-year-old. But actually, the second I realized that I didn't do it, that I didn't know everything, and that every time I got those 40 minutes, that 60 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes in front of someone that has done this job over and over and has much more experience than me, then that was a lifetime
learning opportunity
to learn something about my business that will make me stronger as a CEO, stronger as a businesswoman, will make my business stronger, and the future of it also stronger. So now, you know, every time that I sit in front of an investor, and granted, I've raised money now, I have money in the bank account, things feel safe and nice. And I know that it's a very different place to operate from. So I don't want to diminish that, because it is scary when you're, you know, putting yourself out there and you're seeing, you know, the money run out, and you have people that are dependent on you and their salary, and they have families, and they depend on you, and they have all that pressure. But I always remind myself that at the end of the day, if I can really take the time to stop thinking about all my ideas, and kind of listen around me, I will find the solution to my problems. And that's whether by talking to someone or reading a book or getting informed, whatever it is, polishing one brain, which I like to
say. Yeah, I love it. No, that's a great phrase. And it's having that humility and confidence in your learning ability, right? That's such a skill that's so hard and but so valuable, whether you want to found a company the way you have or whether you want to progress in your career. I think what you say there is such a monumental learning, because it's easier to go on the defensive and try and pick holes in why someone is saying something is not good or the idea or the thing you're bringing, and to distance yourself from it. And as you say, to look at it as that fundamental to learning opportunity is actually a really, really a great skill. And when you're sort of, you know, with all the learnings there about, and I thought they were great, you know, just to recap for everyone, partnering up, having absolute conviction and belief in your ideas, and having that humility and strength to have that introspective work to make rejection become a learning opportunity rather than just a negative experience. I think those are really great fundamental sound lessons. And I think that speaks so much to why you're so successful. But for you, I know you're always chasing the next thing and always looking ahead. So I'm going to ask you now, just to finish off, when you're looking ahead, what is the thing that you want to leave as your legacy? What is the thing that ultimately you'd love to overhear in conversation someone saying about you? You know, what would that thing be for you? What would make your sort of it all worth it?
That is a good question. I think that it would be something along the lines, she really believed women had a space in the sport, and she proved it.
Amazing.
I think that is definitely, you know, a big part of what I do with the United Nations. I'm an ambassador for them for gender equality in football. I sit on the board of an incredible foundation that's called WIST, which is Women in
Sports. Yeah, please. Yeah, great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the work you've been doing with them? Because I think that's a real testament to the fact that you are living out your legacy, by the way. So,
you know, I try my best to invest the time that I have outside of Gloria in basically building a structure that pushes what I believe in forward. And, you know, my work with WIST is a very simple one, in the sense that, you know, it's a foundation that is doing what my mother did for me. My mother told me that gender was never an excuse for anything. And I was, you know, very lucky to have my mother in my life. A lot of women don't have mothers like mine. And WIST does that. WIST educates young girls as early as middle school to let them know that there's a career path that they may have never even thought of, which is
considered,
sports tech, which, by the way, is a type of job that goes very well with the woman, and that is, you know, part of obviously remote work and all of that is something that we've all been experiencing. And to me, it's like such a big beacon of hope, because we all gonna be able to have great careers and great families because of it, you know.
Yes.
Very true. Technology is one of those spaces where remote work has always kind of never been seen badly, because you can do it from home. And at Gloria, we're a fully remote company, and we were prior to COVID.
Everyone else has joined you.
We had a lot of people tell us that we were crazy, that's not going to work. And honestly, to me, it was very simple. I always knew I wanted to have a family. And I never wanted anyone to tell me when I could be with my kids. And I knew that having my own company that respected people's time then would be the key to unlocking that opportunity for me and for anyone that works with us within the company. I work from home. I don't go to an office. I don't have commuting time. I take most of my meetings on Zoom. And I know that the day I have two dogs now, so they're my kids, my sons.
Oh, I love it.
But I know that the day that I have, you know, kids, it's going to be so much easier for me. And I think that the new generation of women need to start understanding this as a real concept. Where, working from home is really what's going to make everything possible. WISP is doing this in a way that I find very exciting and very effective, because they go really early on and they have programs that go into middle schools that teach girls about what working in sports tech look like, and then tell them what classes to take.
I was going to say shaping that. And I said that really pivotal age of 14, 15 years old, right?
And I think that that's really, really amazing. The founder, Marie-Lou, has gone through this herself years ago when like sports tech was not a thing. And women in sports tech was definitely not a thing. And it's amazing. I get to work with some, you know, real ballers. I mean, I don't have any.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely up there as one of the many ballers. So 100% own your seat and 100% recognize that. So thank you so much, Victoire, for sharing your incredible energy, your vision, your passion, and also, of course, the really galvanizing story behind Gloria. I have no doubt in my mind that it will be an absolute giant of a success. And I look forward to continuing to root for you, and I'll always be here in your corner. So keep on going, and thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. Congratulations on this. I want to take the time, because I know you always interview someone, and honestly, what you're doing is something I truly believe in, which is giving women a platform and asking the right questions and getting other people to listen to those answers. And it's important work. And I know that you had an idea and you made it happen. And that is something that not a lot of people get to do. So you're inspiring on your own merit. So
thank you.
I'm a very big fan of yours. I hope that 5 years from now we meet in this podcast again and you become one of the biggest podcasts in the world. And I have a great company and we're talking again.
I truly hope so. And I definitely want to come and visit you in Miami.
Absolutely.
So 100%. So 100%. No, thank you for so much for those incredibly kind words there. And thank you to everybody for tuning in to another episode of In Her Corner. I've been with the absolutely brilliant Victoire Kojovina.